Well, when the going gets tough, the tough get growing. And what better way to grow oneself through tough times than with family, friends, and neighbors in a community garden? But all the community gardens springing up around the land lead us to ask, who puts the community in the community gardens?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 689th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Hokkaido who are tuned in as we stream along on the radio page at metrofarm.com. Wherever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Good morning.
This from Sir Francis Bacon. God Almighty first planted a garden, and indeed it is the purest of human pleasures. It is the greatest refreshment to the spirits of man. Folks, when the going gets tough, the tough do get growing. What better way to get oneself through tough times than by growing plants with family, friends, and neighbors in a community garden? In addition to all the wonderful food and ornamentals that one can harvest in a community garden, there is the security of working in concert with others to build a tangible, living monument to survival. And so it seems the tougher the times, the greater the number of community gardens that sprout into life across the land. Today, all those community gardens and all those gardeners lead us to ask, who put the community in community gardens? Here to help us dig around for an answer, we have Charles Gorlis, who is the author of The Seen But Unheard Garden. Let's see, did I get that right, Charles?
Yes.
Good. So welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you.
You're a retired school teacher.
I am.
And an author.
I hope so.
The Seen But Unheard Garden. What do you mean by seen but unheard?
Well, we discover that plants talk. And in this particular story, the vegetables argue against the flowers. And a whole big thing starts up and becomes a question of vanity. And there's some agronomy. And it's very funny.
Uh-huh. So, talking plants.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And maybe they do talk. I mean, we're beginning to learn about elephants now. So maybe plants talk.
Yeah, I've heard about something else that was talking, but of course those of us who have grown plants intensively will all admit to the fact that we have talked to our plants occasionally, though, you know, we may not admit to it out loud, but we do. So your question or your hypothesis that plants might talk back is very interesting indeed, because the question then becomes, what the heck would our plants say about us if they could talk, right?
Uh-huh. Be scary, wouldn't it?
It would be scary. I don't know. It depends on how well you treat your plants, I guess.
Yeah.
But let me ask you this. You dedicated this book to your wife?
My late wife, yes.
Uh-huh. Was she a community gardener?
First time, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And she was overwhelmed by all the weeds.
All
and
the
I used
weeds?
To tell her, hang on, we'll get rid of them.
Uh-huh.
And then when the harvest came in, she was the happiest person on earth.
Uh-huh. Let me ask you this. Did writing this book help you through the tough times of losing your wife?
Oh, yes. I wanted her memory to be kept going on because she was such a wonderful person.
Mm-hmm.
And a wonderful teacher.
Mm-hmm. So it really did help you get through some tough times, right?
Oh, it did. It was good catharsis. And that picture of her will always be there as long as there are books.
Amen to that.
Hmm.
Well, listen, also with us today, we have the Aptos Community Gardens. Folks, I was honored with the opportunity to sit on the board of the Aptos Community Gardens, which is a community gardens that was just established this year. And I have never had so much fun in my life. It's just absolutely a ball watching this garden come together with such volition. It was just like somebody threw out the suggestion, let's start a community garden. And the community just got behind this in a way that it was just beautiful. And within a few short months' time and lots of hard work by lots and lots of great people, this garden just sprang into life. And on Earth Day, when was that, April?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. We had the grand opening of the garden, and today it is just magnificent. And so today I brought in a couple of people from that community garden. Gene Sandin, welcome, Gene. You can't nod. You have to say hi. this is radio, Gene. You have to say good morning, world.
Good morning.
All right, there you go.
Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Gene.
And, Gene, you're well-connected with the ag community, working with in horticulture for a long, long time, right?
Yes.
And so this is kind of a busman's holiday for you, building this garden.
That is right. It is a grand, grand experience.
All right, good. Also with us today, one of the contributors to the garden. I must note that more than 36 people have contributed over $43,000 in goods and cash and services to build this garden. One of those people are here, Mickey Composter. Welcome to the food chain.
Hi, everybody.
Good to have you aboard. And you're contributing your knowledge and your composting system to the garden, right?
Correct.
Now, you're teaching people all about composting.
I am indeed.
Now, how do they react to the notion that from waste comes gold?
Variously. Some people are really hip to begin with. You'd be surprised. Mm-hmm. And then there's an ocean of folks that find it to be kind of a really new territory.
Mm-hmm.
What we're dealing with is what you might call the urban-rural interface.
Right, right.
That is, for a long time now, people in the city and the suburbs have dealt with their food waste like it's trash or garbage, and essentially valued it to be very, very low value.
So we're really, this community garden is really bringing people who really have not had much experience with producing food for themselves back into the food chain, right, Dean?
Definitely, definitely. It's a great, great experience for all of them that are in it, involved in it.
Charles, do you find the same thing?
Yes, it's a great experience for children, too.
That's right. Oh, very much.
Very much. Okay, good. So today we're going to get into the community of community gardens, and we're going to talk a little bit about the sociology of community gardens, and because that's really what makes community gardens interesting is all the people that are involved. And there are a lot of people involved in the Aptos Community Gardens. What about your gardens, Charles, up back there in Maryland?
In Massachusetts, we have...
Massachusetts.
We advertise every February, and everyone can rent a plot for $40. And it's cleaned up by the city a couple times a year. Mm-hmm. And then everybody can just go in and plant there whatever they want to plant.
So any medical marijuana?
No. None of that. No, we're still behind. No.
Okay, just kidding.
I know.
Let me ask, so this sounds like your community gardens are owned or run by the city?
The city takes care of it, but everybody's welcome to participate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of work, and you have to have a special person that's willing to do that. We have a very tough time getting young people.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is so much work.
That's interesting, isn't it?
I think it is.
Now, let me ask about your youth and childhood. Now, before the show, we were talking about how you used to work in the fields when you were a young lad.
Yes. But then all those farms now have homes in mm-hmm. Massachusetts.
Well, yes, you talked about working 60 hours a week.
Yes. And 7 to 6.
Mm-hmm. And now
6 days a week.
And now you're capable of working in a garden.
I do have I have a flower garden.
Mm-hmm.
But I know what it is to be on your knees for, 8-10 hours a day. And we used to make fun of it. We used to make this very difficult job fun. And that's how we got through the 60 hours.
Mm-hmm. How did you make it fun?
Well, we used to tease each other. We would mm-hmm. play baseball at lunchtime, things like that. And we felt we were bringing home a lot of money. And in those days, we needed it to help keep the family going. So we thought we were contributing.
And making 15 cents an hour.
$15 a week. That was a lot of money.
Well, and that was a lot of money back then, right?
It was. It was, yeah.
But this whole notion of work is very interesting, and we'll pick it up when we come back.
Okay.
Because we wonder what happened to the youth of today, and will they be able to work in gardens or on farms? What do you think out there? We're talking community gardens, and you. Can you garden? What would your plants say about you if they could talk about you? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Community gardens. Who put the community in community gardens? Pick up your phone and join us today. We're talking gardening with Mickey Gorlis, Charles Gorlis out there in Massachusetts. We're talking with Gene Sandin and Mickey DeComposter from the Aptos Community Gardens, and yours truly, Michael Olson. And you, do stay tuned. We will be right back after these very important messages.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, welcome back. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here, talking community gardens. And folks, that tougher the times get, and the times are getting tough out there, the more we like to get out into the garden and grow our way out of those tough times. Because not only do we get food and beautiful ornamentals from our efforts, you know, we're actually getting something tangible out of our efforts. But in a community garden, we get to work with our friends and our family and our neighbors to build a tangible living monument to survival. And they are beautiful. The community garden with which I am attached here in Aptos, California, started just a few months ago with, now we have, how many plots are live and kick?
48.
48. We have 48 gardens.
Out of 80.
Community garden, and each one is different, and they're vibrant, and they're beautiful, and they're happy. And so whenever I get to out and about in my day job and running around and harried and frazzled, I swing by that community garden and just get a look, you know, and just seeing the growth of all of those different plots just kind of picks me up and makes me feel good, and I can hang around there for a couple of minutes and breathe the air and go away and feel pretty strong. And for those who are actually growing there, they get much stronger. And so that's what we're talking about today, is the community gardens. And one question I have is that what role does a community play in a community garden? Let's start off with that, and like, who sponsors them? Charles Gorlis out there in Massachusetts, you talked about the city as being a sponsor of the garden. Is that who runs things then?
Yes, it's the Conservation Commission that runs it.
Which is part of the municipal government then?
Yes.
Okay, good. Gene Sandin, who sponsors the Aptos Community Gardens?
Well, we have multiple sponsors. The land is provided by the church, mm-hmm. There's no other connection there except for that. And the sponsors are just people that have dedicated their resources to see that this thing was a success. And we've got 30-some sponsors.
I counted 36 sponsors,
36,
yeah.
That have donated their time to get the thing operating. And it's been marvelous.
So this is really a crusade of private citizens.
Right. And the people are so happy. They've Right now, they're starting to get produce from their little gardens, and they are. Some of them can't believe it because they've never gardened before, and yet they're getting something. It's just like creating life, and it is really an experience to be down there every day and listen to their comments and their appreciation of what is going on.
Well, who are the volunteers?
The volunteers are...
They're just... You and I, right?
Well...
And Mickey the composter. And,
right, Mickey...
And Trent and Linda and... Melanie and everybody.
Board, yeah.
So it's just a bunch of people.
That's right.
So
people
who,
helping people.
Who pays for it?
The financing of it basically is just for the water. Mm-hmm. And that's what they pay for when they get a plot. Is basically they're paying just for the water for the year. It's $75 a year, 75 cents a square foot. If you have larger than
Charles, who pays for who pays the way out there?
Well, we do with our $40-$50 a season.
So the government doesn't have to subsidize anything?
No, we don't want any government intervention.
Good. So when we talk about who is the community, then the community really is the community, isn't it? I mean, it's not the government; it's just the people.
Sure.
Right.
Huh. No government, all people. So the donations, this is what was really extraordinary to me in watching the development of the Aptos Community Gardens is that the organizing committee went out in the community and asked for help. And within people just started pouring stuff into that little garden space, like $43,000 worth of goods and services. There's a beautiful fence built around it. There's irrigation pipe. There's soil beds. It's just extraordinary. How'd that happen?
Well, that's through our coordinator on this, the main one that got this thing really going, Melanie Larson. And
Chief Arm Twister?
Oh, she has been magnificent. And through that, her efforts, people have just come together and whatever we needed was there.
Well, Mickey Composter, you're one of those people that, was asked for something and you were there with it. So what led you to contribute to the community garden?
The word community got me right away because I feel that's where our future lies. In community. I think that's where we live, and it's an ill-understood concept, how people actually relate to life. We are bombarded to the media with large-scale ideas about big government and big finance and big industry, and that's all well and good, but people actually live in a community and function there. And when you say times get hard, that's where it hits, right, in the community. And so one of the big ideas about community is diversity and sustainability and versatility. And gardening is a key, just a linchpin of some of this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what brought me in, the idea of community. Also, I must put in a plug for what we disdained a moment ago as the government involvement.
Mm-hmm.
I am a certified master composter by the County of Santa Cruz, and our tax dollars trained me through Ecology Action, a subcontractor,
sure,
to learn how to get people to divert their food waste from the trash stream. Mm-hmm. Because the landfill is a big problem.
Let me ask, Charles, do you have the same problem in Massachusetts?
Not really.
Not really? You have plenty of room to stash your trash?
Well, we're burning everything now, and we do recycle. We recycle paper and plastics.
Uh-huh, right. And what about the food waste? What about the organic materials?
Well, unfortunately, we don't have a school program. That would solve that problem.
Mm-hmm.
I have a daughter that teaches in the inner city in Philadelphia, and they have a little plant curriculum there, and they even have a little plot. And I'd like to see that happen throughout the country, where they would take part of the class under science, probably,
mm-hmm,
and have a little plot where the kids go out and do these things. But, see, the summer ski season kills that. Everything is growing in the summer, and the kids are out of school.
It's amazing how that works, right?
Yeah, but that might change with the new rules coming forth.
Uh-huh.
They want to stay in. They want to take the school day and make it longer, and I think that'll do something for that. But I would say, if you really wanted to get this thing going, and we all do naturally, through the schools, and to a point where the kids actually go out and start a garden and watch it come to fruition.
They have a lot of programs like that that are coming into fruition around the country, and it's wonderful to see.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, Charles. Who manages your garden? Do you have a sheriff of the grounds?
No. Because
nobody manages it? You mean it's...
No. The Conservation Commission will come by once a month. It's mostly all adults, and everyone's too busy working.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have time to get in trouble. And they're too tired.
Yeah, I guess there's a point there, right?
A lot of work there, as you know.
Yeah, I do.
Especially in New England, because we have a short season.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to get things cooking pretty fast.
And so you're on it right away. But you don't have a garden manager or anything?
Well, as I say, the Conservation Commission will come by.
Okay. Well, Gene, who manages it? You do.
Yes.
You're the sheriff of the garden, right?
That's right.
Uh-huh. And is there much sheriffing to do?
No. We have an excellent group of gardeners out there. It's the enthusiasm and it's just unexplainable.
They just take care of themselves.
Yeah, huh? They are so excited about what they're doing that everything just falls in line.
All you have to do is walk around and smile?
The only thing I have is gophers once in a while.
Oh, good. Okay. So when we get back, I'd like to talk about how society is structured in a community garden. You know, when I look at a community garden, look down on it, I kind of think of the Amish. What? When we get back, we'll talk about that. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking community gardens with Charles Garlis, who is the author of The Seen But Unheard Garden. Also, those from the Aptos Community Garden, Gene Sandin and Mickey the Composter. And you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Hey, welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain. Today we're talking community gardens and your garden. Do you have a garden? If you do, let me ask you this big question, posed by Charles Garlis, who is the author of The Seen But Unheard Garden. Charles asks, if your plants could talk, what would they say about you? Nikki, what would your plants say about you?
Oh, they love me.
They love you. I bet they do.
Oh, yeah.
Gene, what would your plants say about you?
They would say the same thing, and they'd say that especially about all the gardeners in the field. They just love their garden, and they love their plants. And the plants are really giving them a good production.
Mickey, what would your plants say about you?
They sort of tolerate me. And they say, that really nature provides, God provides for the plant, and I help it along. And we're a partnership. They just say, yeah, let's just do it. And they reward us with such bounty.
Mm-hmm. And you're feeding him.
Oh, yeah, I am.
You're the jaw. You're the feeder, right?
Well,
you're the one that's
making
the chow. You're the chef in the kitchen.
Mm, yeah, that's true. The chef de compote.
Yep. Charles Garlis, what would your plants say about you?
My flowers think I'm too fussy.
Oh, yeah? How's that?
Well, I'm always pruning them and deadheading them and feeding them, and they're probably saying, gee, why doesn't he give us a rest?
Uh-huh. Well, I think my plants would probably say just about the opposite of that. They would say, give me a little more attention. Give me a little more attention. Give me a little more attention. Just a little more.
Uh-huh.
And I guess that's what happens when you get really too busy. But I have wonderful plants. My plants are dwarf fruit trees. I love them. Let's talk a little bit about, to go back to the community garden. I wanted to talk about how society is structured in a community garden, because what you have is a basic common ground divided up into individual plots. And when I was sitting there looking at the Aptos Community Garden the other day, I got to thinking, gee, this is kind of like the Amish. You know, you have a bunch of people who are growing things, in they're all doing the same thing in a different way. And yet they do it in a way that they can do it together without running or stepping on each other's toes. So there has to be an intricate balance of how they go about doing things. Gene, you've got 45 different individual gardens in this little tiny plot. How do people get along?
Very good. In fact, they're planning on having a get-together where they share their production amongst each other. And also they're going to have barbecues. They're talking about a little farmer's market amongst themselves and to give to the community. And it's very interesting. And I can't get over how excited everybody is about this effort.
But how do they get along? I mean, they're just a couple feet away from each other.
Oh, no problem. Share amongst each other. Everybody is individual in their what they've put into their garden,
right,
and
right.
They all can see that. And they're so interested in what everybody else is doing.
So the individuality of each plot actually attracts.
Right.
People actually enjoy that individuality.
They sure do.
Do you find the same thing, Charles?
No. In the book that I've written, Florence is the only female gardener raising flowers, and everyone else is raising vegetables. And she has the very best plot, and no one asks her for advice. They're all men, and we're so reluctant to ask for any information.
No directions, right? You're not going to ask for directions.
Right, that's why they have GPS, I suppose. And anyway, they have her plot is so outstanding that flower photographers come in and take pictures, and artists come in and sketch. And every time there's a photo shoot, they never invite Florence. So a typical thing. And Florence doesn't mind. They make fun of her because she sings and plays music. And that was a thought I was going to give to Jean. In the very end of the story, everyone finally admits that they have to talk to Florence. So the governing board invites her into their sacrosanct place. She's the first female to get into the governor board's core headquarters. And they finally ask her, what is her secret? And she puts down 0+TLC.
Uh-huh.
And then she leaves. And they're all questioning each other. What does this mean? Finally, they ask her, and she says it means no fertilizer, tender loving care, and she plays music for her plants. She plays classical music. And they all respond, all her flowers respond, and that stops all the animosity between the vegetables and the flowers.
And
it's quite a funny story.
Okay, good. Let me ask you, speaking of music, do you hear people singing in the gardens, Gene?
Yes, and we have one of a very good musician that has just gotten a plot started, and I told him too. I said, you know, I understand that if plants and animals that react to music, so if your plants will probably do very well. So I think that we are planning on having a little musical get together, and he's going to provide music. So there's things going on that I think all attribute to what happens in the garden.
Do you think plants listen? Do you think that they're actually cognizant of the attention of the people?
Yes. I read where if you were pruning plants, they have recorded the little, they go eek and from the cut. And so I know, Charles, you had mentioned that earlier about cutting the flowers, and you feel that you're doing some damage to them or making them feel bad, but that's probably very true.
Okay, we'll go along with that. So everybody's doing the same thing differently. We're all growing our little plots here, and yet somehow we find attraction to the fact that our neighbor's plot looks different. Uh-huh. Is there any competitiveness in this?
Yes, there is some.
There has to be, right? I mean, come on.
It's like
Charles is getting at here. That girl can grow flowers, and I can't grow anything. What's wrong with her?
Well,
what's wrong
is.
With her, you know?
There are some. They say, how can that garden look so much better than ours? We're doing the same thing, aren't we? I think, you know, a lot of these people have never never had anything to do with a garden before in their lives, and they have some of the most beautiful produce coming out of there. One of them asked me about a plant that he had planted there that he was told it was a certain plant, and now it's growing, and he can't understand why it's like it is. I said, well, it's a cabbage instead of the one that he was supposedly getting.
You thought you were growing roses, and you grew a cabbage,
huh? He was so happy with it. So.
Okay, right. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. We're having a little fun today talking about community gardens. It's not just the garden. It's not just the plants that you get out of the garden. It's what you put into the garden, and it's the people around you, and it's the monument that you're building, the living monument to surviving, and that's what's fun about a community garden. And we will be right back after these important messages, so please do stay tuned. Pick up some phone calls, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, right back.
Hi, folks. How many of you out there love to garden? Wouldn't it be nice to grow some of your own food, or maybe a flower garden would brighten your day? Well, now you can have the pleasures of gardening without all that effort. You don't need a tractor. You don't need a rototiller. All you need is the Knox Garden Box, a heavily constructed portable elevated garden on legs that can virtually change the way you've gardened in the past. The Knox Garden Box can be set up anywhere. Yes, you can place it right on concrete. For those with bad backs, you've got critters and gophers, no space or maybe no dirt. With the Knox Garden Box, the therapy of garden is now the prescription for good mental health. The way to find your fabulous Knox Garden Box is by logging on to KnoxGardenBox.com. That's K-N-O-X, GardenBox.com. Or by calling 831-461-9430.
Great shot, Bob. I think you're on.
I just followed your lead.
Hey, by the way, did you break ground on your new building?
No way. I'm holding off until I see what the future holds.
So you're seeing a fortune teller or
something? You know what I mean. Things look a little uncertain.
The only thing certain in business is if you're not growing, you're losing. And we just opened our fifth facility last week. If you're following my lead, you'll call General Steel. Their pre-engineered steel buildings could save you as much as half the cost compared to conventional buildings. And they're up in nearly half the time. And back with a 50-year structural warranty.
Yeah, but steel buildings...
Hey, you've seen my building. Does it look like steel?
No, it looks great.
Ask about rebates that could save you up to $20,000. Look, you can stop paying rent and own a building that suits your business better and probably saves you money by operating more efficiently. In times like these, don't stop spending, just spend wisely.
Call 800-965-1290, 800-965-1290, 800-965-1290.
Sirens, jet engines, car horns, leaf blowers. Today's world puts our sense of hearing on overload. Luckily, there are places we can go to refocus our senses. Our national wildlife refuges. It's amazing how much more you'll hear when you just take a minute to listen. Like a stirring chorus of songbirds warbling in the treetops. Or the industrious beaver slapping its tail in the mountain pond over baritone bullfrogs. Or the pulsating beat of a pileated woodpecker looking for a meal. When you hear these things, you're hearing the world the way we found it. With over 500 refuges across America, you don't have to go far to make a special connection with nature. Learn more at fws.gov/refuges. That's fws.gov/refuges.
Hey, we're back. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here, and we've got Charles Gorlis out there in Massachusetts. He's the author of The Seen But Unheard Garden. We have Gene Sandin and Mickey, the composter from the Aptos Community Garden. And my goodness, Mary just walked in the door. Mary, come over here. Share this microphone with me now.
Hi,
Mike. When we were talking on the break, you said your plants respond to music. What kind of music?
Jimi Hendrix does best.
Jimi Hendrix does best. What kind of plants?
Mostly vegetables. The gardener in the house has a great voice. A little percussion helps, too.
So he's out there playing Jimi Hendrix and tending his plants, and they love it.
They love it. They're growing great.
All right, thank you very much, Mary. Appreciate your dropping by and letting us know. And if you'd like to drop by and tell us about your plants, we'd love to hear about it. Phone numbers today here on the Food Chain, 831-479-1080. And throughout the country, it's 800-624-2665. Talk a little bit about the society of a garden. You know, surely, when you have so many people working in the same place, doing the same thing all differently, you got to have rules to get by. Gene?
That's right. We do have rules.
No medical marijuana. Okay.
No, the main thing is to keep the cooperative efforts in the garden, that everybody works together and there's no problems with someone invading other territories. And no, we don't have that problem. We don't really need a oversee on this stuff, but it's there just in case we need to have
And it's just basically common sense rules, like
right. Yeah,
thou shalt not step on your plant, neighbor's plants and stuff like that.
Thou shalt put the plant
the
in
away.
With the roots down.
Okay, put the plants in with the roots down. That's a good rule to start with. Charles, what about you? Does your organization have any kind of rules for getting along?
Well, like Gene, everyone's so busy and everyone's so tired. They don't have time to get in trouble. I think that's the key to life anyway.
It is, isn't it? You know, and you know where I think that relates directly to what we've all been talking around this whole idea of getting used to work. And we've done a magnificent job of industrializing our agriculture to the point where we no longer need kids on the farm. And so we thrust the kids into town, and what do? Nothing. Hang around, and they're not working anymore. So what is the propensity is? Well, let's go get into trouble, right? Or what do they do if they're not working? If they don't have some kind of vital energy coursing through their brains? If they're not using their mind, Charles?
Exactly.
How do we get kids? How do we get kids to work on the farm? How do we get kids to work in a garden? Start it in school.
Right, and then carry it over. You'll have to pay them, obviously.
Why?
So if we could find, maybe raise money during the school year, mm-hmm. and then in the summertime, these kids will go to their plots and work, and then they could sell the food and raise money for the next crop of kids, so to speak.
Well, I always had to work when I was a kid growing up, and much of it was on a farm, and I always got paid. You got paid, didn't you?
Yes.
Gene,
yes.
Did you get paid when you worked on a farm?
Yes.
Mickey, do you ever work on a farm?
Yeah, but it was volunteer or, you know, grow your own mm-hmm. kind of approach.
Do you guys think that kids are too rich? Or maybe they don't have a need to work anymore? And maybe that's why they don't work anymore? That's a tough one, huh?
Kids, that's a broad category. A lot of different kinds
right?
of kids.
A lot of kids,
a lot
yeah.
of different situations.
Throwing some questions out here, Mickey.
We've got an educational system that has... you know, taking a direction away from where most people are. And you have high-tech jobs, you have professional jobs in college direction careers, and it's pretty limited. There just isn't enough for all the young people. So there a great section of youngsters are left out.
Mm-hmm.
And they just have no future. And they don't have the old-time stuff about farming and community. They haven't been taught that.
Or nor how to put two pieces of metal together and make them do something, right?
Well, you talk about perhaps the trades.
Trades,
getting
the same
along,
thing.
Just common sense, putting, making stuff work locally. They're taught to, you know, have their sights really high on really well-paying professional careers, and yet
there aren't that many.
It's very limited, so yeah. It's kind of a conundrum here. So the farming and the agriculture and the community approach and the family approach is what we need and what we used to have. It was on a little different basis in the past.
Well, it was kind of survival.
It was. And now we've learned a lot. We have the technology we have may be applied to to really better ourselves. We're in a great spot now in history to kind of redirect what's happening. And the young people need...
When the going gets tough, the tough get growing, right? Yeah.
And have faith in the youth. They're smart. Mm-hmm.
I think they are smart. And I think they're so full of energy and so full of brilliance. Yeah. And yet they're kind of lost at how to apply that. And perhaps... as Charles is saying, that we should give them a little different direction in our school other than just toward this high-tech place in where you're plugging numbers together or something like that. That it doesn't have to be all, you know, that. It could be that they could find some joy also in physical work.
Physical work, work with the earth.
Yeah.
That's a winner.
Gene?
How about maybe they're too involved in the... sports activities anymore to the work is secondary.
Oh.
I mean, if there's a time for it, we'll do it.
There it is. Okay, folks, right back with a big question. If your plants could say something about you, what would they say? Do stay tuned. Well, a few minutes left and so many miles to go. How on earth do we establish our own community garden? What, does it take a lot? What do you think? Gene, what do I do? I want to start a community garden. What's my first step?
The first step is you got to have some property.
Got to have some property.
Then you have to make a layout of what you can...
There's a lot of property around. You guys just went to a church and said, the Christ Lutheran Church in Aptos, and said, you've got all this land here.
Right, and it was beautiful land. It hadn't been anything growing on it for maybe 100 years or even more, weeds, except for weeds.
Mm-hmm.
And the weeds were every year composting themselves into the soil.
So the church didn't give you the land. It just says, here, use it.
Right. It's for use and...
So step number one is there's a lot of land around. You don't have to own it. You just have to be able to control
it
for a while.
Just obtain some land and then lay it out and then start bringing the people in.
So you kind of need an organizing structure, a committee.
Right.
It's a board of directors.
Right. And then you have to get, like for water, we use rainwater.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a storage tank. And we filled that tank in 4 hours on the first rain. It's a 5,000-gallon tank. And one of these were contributed items to the garden.
So you need a good board of directors, and you need somebody who can go out and wheedle people out of their stuff.
Right. And we have that.
Charles, let me ask you this. You got your land from the city, right?
Yes.
And the cities generally have lots of land.
Oh, not well. We used to have lots of farmland, but as I said earlier, they're all homes now, and we're down to very little free land.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's little nooks and crannies here about.
Just about.
Yeah. And so you got yours from the city. The city owns the land, and they said, go ahead, you can use it. You got permission to use it.
Yes.
And you had to set up an organization, I would assume, to assume responsibilities, or somebody that the city could yell at, right?
Right. Conservation committee.
Conservation committee.
Yeah, I was going to suggest to Gene that, you know, when you set up land, make sure you have plenty of sun. We have that problem back here.
Oh, that's one thing we have.
We have
plenty
sun.
Of sun.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not so fortunate, and our season is so short.
Yeah.
How short is your season?
Well, it starts in May, end of May, and we're done late October.
Mm-hmm.
We're picking up pumpkins in October, and that's it.
There it is. And then it's time to have winter, right?
Exactly.
Good.
Time to lie fallow and rebuild.
What is the single biggest mistake you made in the first year, Gene?
Well, I think basically I would say it was that we did not provide enough storage for the rainwater.
Mm-hmm.
We ran out. It runs out about once a month, and it's tough.
Sure.
We have to use city water. But water's quite reasonable.
When you have enough people to share the cost, right? Charles, what's the biggest mistake you see being made?
I think wanting to plant too many plants.
Wanting to plant too many, oh, good. Well, Charles Gorlis, author of The Seen But Unheard Garden, Gene Sandin, one of the board members from the Aptos Community Garden in Aptos, California, and also Mickey Composter, who is one of the contributors to the Aptos Community Garden. If you want to take a look at that garden, you can do so at www.aptoscommunitygardens.org and give it a look and go out and start your own community gardens. This is what, when the going gets tough, it's time for us to get tough and start growing. And that's our message for today. Thank you, Charles. Thank you, Gene. Thank you, Mickey. And thank you all out there for tuning in. Join us on the forum page at metroforum.com. See you next week for more What's Eating What Radio.
Thank you, Mike.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.